Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for July 28, 2009. I'm Annalisa Van Hook. This week, Science Signaling publishes a focus issue on complexity. I spoke with Science Signaling's chief scientific editor, Michael Yaffe, about the papers featured in this focus issue. Everything that happens on a cell biological level could be considered complex. In what sense is this special issue focusing on complexity?
I think complexity occurs at multiple different levels in cell signaling. There's complexity at the level of the manner in which individual proteins interact with one another, and that's what's brought out, for example, in the Keel and Serrano paper, where one looks in isolation, in essence, at two proteins and how their interaction modulates downstream responses. There's also complexity at the level of how one or more proteins controls a diversity of different responses. For example, how an event like growth factor stimulation can control the transcription of dozens, if not hundreds, of genes. And there's also complexity at the level of any particular transcription factor or individual molecule, where it receives multiple inputs, which ultimately dictate its biological behavior. And finally, there's complexity at the level of protein interaction networks. We typically like to think of networks as being discrete modules that interact in some perhaps incompletely defined manner among themselves. What's clear is that if we stimulate cells with multiple stimuli simultaneously, the responses that we get aren't necessarily additive. And as a result, it means that these signaling pathways that we've often thought of as modules must be interacting with one another in a manner that is not necessarily straightforward to interpret. So I think those are all different aspects of complexity. All of the responses of a cell must follow simple chemical laws and rules of Newtonian mechanics. And yet I think one would be hard put to explain the behavior of most things in our world, of most complex things in our world, things like televisions and radios, from simple rules of electromechanics and chemical reactions and Newtonian dynamics. And as a result, we often think of things like radios and televisions as being inherently complex, when in fact we know that underneath they still work by these fundamental rules. And I think the same thing is true in some ways for the behavior of a cell. The ultimate response that we see must be the products of each of these individual signaling pathways and networks and proteins, and yet trying to understand the behavior as a whole from studying individual components seems at times to be an insurmountable challenge.
Cell signaling networks are not only complex at a mechanistic level in terms of how proteins interact with one another and how information flows through the pathway, but aren't they also complex in terms of how the networks behave over time and how characteristics of the pathway change as information flows through the pathway?
Absolutely. One of the limitations of our current understanding of protein-protein interactomes is that we typically represent protein-protein interactions in these complex hairball-type diagrams in which everything is static. And yet we know that the way proteins communicate with another is, in fact, very dynamic. And as a result, a connection from one protein to another is likely mediated differently as a function of time. And this is an area of intense investigation, but so far we haven't found a particularly convenient way to diagram, at least in two dimensions, how things change over time. A number of new scientific techniques have emerged which are allowing, at least to a certain extent, the temporal decoding of signaling, in addition to spatial changes, which we also have difficulty representing in these two-dimensional interaction diagrams. This has been an area of intense investigation in my own laboratory. In 2005, for example, we published a paper in Science where we described signaling pathways that seem to be involved in promoting apoptosis downstream of TNF-alpha and how this pathway was suppressed by insulin signaling. And what emerged from that study was that particular kinases could do exactly opposite things depending on when they were active. So a kinase activity early on after stimulation might be promoting apoptosis, while later on it might be inhibiting apoptosis. And furthermore, we found that the responses that we saw when cells were stimulated with TNF-alpha alone or insulin alone were not recapitulated when cells were stimulated with TNF-alpha plus insulin together, suggesting that the response could not be described as a linear sum of the individual responses. This must mean that the network changes when it sees the same stimuli together compared to when it sees the stimuli alone. And this, in effect, could constitute a form of cellular memory. That is, the way the network reorganizes is dependent on the prior history of stimulation. This means that the phenotypic response of a particular cell is likely to be the integrated response of the prior state of the network as it evolved from prior stimuli. So the dynamic nature of the interactome plays a critical role in determining how cells respond in the future based on how they've been stimulated in the past.
Now that we're beginning to learn more about how the dynamics of signaling can affect activity through the pathway, what implications does that have for the type of research people are doing to understand signaling pathways?
I think it means that future studies that attempt to look at dynamic interactions will require measurements that are diverse in both time and space. It means that in contrast to how we typically have done experiments in the past, where we measure the activity at one or two or a relatively small number of time points, it means that now we have to think about ways that we can expand our approach to measure interactions at densely sampled points in time and correlate that with the phenotypic response that we see. In a paper that our laboratory published in 2008, we used this approach together with some computational modeling in order to try to identify the periods of time when particular signals were important or unimportant. And one of the interesting things that emerged from that work was the discovery that activities of protein kinases at some points in time, even though they were present, had very little effect on the phenotypic outcome. But under other stimulation conditions, those same activities now became critical determinants for the ultimate outcome of the experiment, suggesting that dynamic activity within a complex signaling network may occur with important or unimportant consequences depending on the overall state of the cell when that activity occurs.
So understanding the complexity of signaling networks, both at the mechanistic and the temporal level, then is important in not only understanding what's going on in cells and understanding how to interpret your experiments, but it should also be important then to understand the complexities of these pathways when we're thinking about manipulating cells, for example, using drugs or to treat disease.
I think you've hit the nail on the head here, because what it means is that when we decide to inhibit a particular protein kinase or activate a phosphatase or inhibit a transcription factor, it means that we have to think very carefully about what the signaling state of the cell is and how it's gotten there at the time that we decide to do the inhibition. It means that the current way that we treat most patients, for example, is probably not ideal because we simply treat them with one dose at some not particularly well-specified point in time. And it may make more sense, particularly if we decide to use multiple agents, to put the cells into one particular signaling state and then inhibit them with an inhibitor in a manner that is better defined to generate the response that we want.
How do the articles that are included in this focus issue address complexity?
They do so at three distinct levels, and I think that's a wonderful aspect of the diversity of the different approaches. One approach is very focused on two molecules, RAS and RAF. And intriguingly, in this paper by Keel and Serrano, they show that it's the specific association and dissociation rates of RAS and RAF that determine the net effect on MAP kinase signaling. But they do so differently in different cell types. In one cell type that lacks negative feedback, changes in the association and dissociation rate have a pronounced effect on MAP kinase activity. In another cell type in which there was strong negative feedback, alterations in the kinetics of RAS and RAF association had much less effect on the duration of ERK activity. And this suggests that not only are molecular determinants likely to be important in controlling cellular responses, but it's the architecture of the network in different cell types that regulates the effect that protein-protein interactions will have. A paper by Wang and Frankel in this issue attempts to integrate proteomic, transcriptional, and interactome data in order to identify hidden components within the network by using a very clever algorithm from graph theory. And the third paper, which comes from Tan and colleagues, looks at conserved protein phosphorylation networks and finds two particularly intriguing observations. One is that when you compare the protein phosphorylation sites in humans with that in flies, worms, and yeast, many of the proteins that are phosphorylated and many of the protein kinase and substrate interactions are conserved, but the exact position within the protein that's phosphorylated changes. The second observation was that for those proteins in which the phosphorylation site is highly conserved, many of those proteins turn out to be involved in fundamental cellular processes and are also the targets of mutation in various diseases such as cancer. This suggests that there may be a fundamental core architecture of signaling networks that is both highly conserved and whose mutation results in a variety of disease states. Perhaps the most interesting aspect of that is the fact that mutations in these core and highly conserved proteins don't result in general lethality, but instead result in the emergence of multiple disease phenotypes. So what these three papers in the issue on complexity show us is there is still a lot of work to be done in trying to understand the dynamic nature of the signaling interactome and how complexity arises from the accretion of multiple modular domains and signaling pathways. In addition, it highlights that there are a variety of different approaches that one can take, ranging from the experimental to the theoretical, that are all likely to yield new insights into the complex behavior of living systems.
Well, thanks for talking to me, Mike.
Absolutely, Annalisa.
That was Chief Scientific Editor Michael Yaffe talking about the contents of the July 28th issue of Science Signaling, a focus issue that complements the July 24th Science Special issue on complexity. In addition to the three research articles that Michael mentioned, the complexity focus issue also includes four perspectives, two of which highlight research recently published in Science Signaling. A perspective by Flick and Kaiser highlights findings from a research article by Golubowski and co-workers on the dynamics of sumoylation during the heat shock response, which was originally published in the May 29th issue of Science Signaling. Also, research articles by Koba and colleagues and by Sue and colleagues, published in recent issues of Science Signaling, are highlighted in a perspective by Hlavacek and Fader, which focuses on the importance of quantifying both the interactions between components of a signaling network and the cellular response to signaling. A third perspective by Alexander and colleagues addresses the dynamic modularity of signaling networks. And a fourth perspective by Kobayashi and Kageyama discusses how the frequency of signaling events can influence the cellular response. Finally, an editorial guide by Goff and Foley summarizes the contents of this focus issue and discusses how these articles fit into the larger picture of cell signaling complexity. That wraps up this Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, Advancing Science, Serving Society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook. On behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.